You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 4th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Hillary T-shirt cannon at Scott Walker's Great Wall of Canada, it's the 300th episode of The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, baby. That's
hey,
right.
Hey, I got news for you.
Huh?
Two Canadian T-shirts are exactly the same as Mike Huckabee fundraising in Israel.
Exactly the same. Exactly.
Both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't recall that story being pimped all over Breitbart's or Fox News or wherever the hell else. But, you know, hey, it's pretty much the same thing.
Well, and I was doing a lot of reading up yesterday because of the Iran deal going through now, the Senate, about probably the second most evil man in the world, John Bolton.
Yes.
Boy, you read his biography and you're just like, is there anything evil he didn't do?
Nope.
But not Lindsey Graham, but the RNC chair, who you always called Boss Hogg, remember?
Oh, yeah. Haley Barbour.
RNC chair.
Haley Barbour.
And they set up this, like, council for something affairs thing, which was an RNC-sponsored group that held conferences. And in order to attend the conference, you had to be a conference sponsor. Your company had to be a conference sponsor. Mm-hmm. And the cost of that was like at least the lowest level was $200,000. You had to donate. Your company had to donate.
Mm-hmm.
And what you got for that, the other people that attended the conferences were Republican legislators from the House and Senate.
Yeah.
And so particularly all these telecommunications companies were buying sponsorships
for these conferences.
Important conferences, mm-hmm. where you would meet with U.S. senators and so forth. And it just was absolutely buying out. And then Congress investigated this group, not because of anything that I've just mentioned, because all of that under campaign finance law is legal.
I'll say, it's just called a money funnel, honey.
Except that, apparently, conference organizers were more than happy to invite foreign-owned companies to sponsor.
Hey, your money's green. Come on in.
And just as Congress was getting ready to figure all of that out, John Bolton resigned from this group.
Oh, that's a shame.
So
you often do good work among the poor? No.
So he could start a 501c3 that ran those ads against the Iran deal because we really want to boost our war stocks.
Yeah. Every time I get on Twitter, there's a John Bolton survey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I meant to say...
email collection unit.
honeypot for your email address.
Exactly.
And, you know, a Trump honeypot.
And that's the whole game.
Yeah.
And I did also, just one last thing on this Iran deal, because we're not experts in this at all. But a couple things. Somebody pointed out to me, DS, our correspondent DS, pointed out to us that if Obama follows the lead of George W. Bush and John Woo, he doesn't ever have to tell Congress anything about weapons of mass destruction in Iran or anywhere else.
Yep.
Because, let's face it, national security.
John Woo wrote the loophole. Mm-hmm. You know, jammed his crowbar into the Constitution and pried open a loophole that says, you know, if the president doesn't want to tell Congress about this really, really important shit, fuck him. He doesn't have to. And you know what? I don't remember the streets filling up with these constitutional conservatives and people wearing tri-corner hats when that happened.
Yep.
So, of course, that happened before 2009.
But, of course, that happened before King Obama decided to rename a mountain.
That's right. I got to say, the funniest – I'll just brief aside. The funniest part of that whole story, you have to go over to Mock, Paper, Scissors. to make fun
Yay,
of.
Yay, 10 grain. Yeah.
To make fun of Bristol Palin, who he calls Brisket the Naughty Nun, who wrote, you know, one of her patented gibberish Jeremiads about the mountain and how nobody in Alaska calls it Denali. That's just bullshit. Nobody does that. That's crazy. Forgetting, of course, that her mother, not only did her mother call it that in her mother's farewell speech in Alaska, her farewell speech in Alaska was famously riffed by William Shatner on the Conan show. So it's so hard not to tumble down the rabbit hole of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you're going to get one of these people, whether it's Bolton or Brisket or Palin or somebody.
Or Cheney or Mrs. Cheney. Liz Cheney.
Hey, you know what? You're right. You fucking caught me. I said nobody in Alaska calls this mountain Denali. My mom actually called it that in her most famous speech. You got me. I was wrong. But that's never going to happen, Ugal. They just don't say they're wrong. They never admit they're wrong. So that's, you know, problem solved. We just deny, and move on to the next shiny object.
The other thing I found out in investigating some of this war stock stuff is that the war business is dwindling because of worldwide budget shortages. There is actually a smaller pie, and the amount of defense exports, you know, military exports that Israel did in 2013 was $1 billion more than it was in 2014. It was only $5.66 billion worth of weapons exported from Israel. $5.66 billion. That's not a lot, Driftglass.
That's just chump change. Yeah.
And what's the other thing that's interesting, I mean, this really doesn't relate to Cheney or anything, but the defense industry stuff is being replaced. This actually relates to Mr. Robot.
Uh-huh.
Firms are discovering, we can't sell weapons, but we can sell cyber stuff.
Right, right. Yep.
And at the moment, a lot of this cyber stuff is not regulated the same way that military contracts are. So you don't have to run everything by a Senate committee, for instance, to sell cybersecurity stuff to people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where war is moving. War is moving to computers. And, I mean, this is very Mr. Robotish, but yeah. Defense, this is 2014 was the first year that the economy of Israel tallied more in cybersecurity orders than in traditional aerospace and defense business. And I single out Israel because they sold weapons to Iran in Iran-Contra for Reagan. That's why I'm singling them out.
Yes, they did. And they laundered the money so that we could then send it to the Contras.
Exactly.
And then Reagan was impeached because all that was illegal. wait a minute. That never happened. Well, at least they went to jail. No, that never happened either.
The thing I can't find out is, you know, everybody knows Dick Cheney's gotten rich off all this stuff. I can't find out if Bibi Netanyahu has defense industry donors to his political campaigns. I'm assuming yes. But I can't find any documentation on that. If anybody knows, send it to us. ProLeftPodcast@gmail.com.
The next time I talk to David Brooks, I will ask. Because, you know, his son works for Bibi Netanyahu.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I have forgotten that. Uh-huh.
His son believed so much in his father's Iraq war that he toddled off to Israel to sign up with their military.
Yeah, yeah.
And now takes orders from Benjamin Netanyahu. So
let's talk about Emailgate for a minute.
Yeah, well, the Hillary's going to jail thing is now accepted wisdom on the right. And when that falls apart, they're going to lose it because they got nothing else. Benghazi is another dry well. All of the shit that they are so sure about, you know, they really literally are down to Canadian tourists buying T-shirts.
Shut down the government, Driftglass. They can shut down the government.
And by the way, the Canadians didn't have money to do that. They had to buy them through an intermediary who was, I believe, someone who worked for
James O'Keefe.
Jimmy Jojo O'Keefe. And which put him on the hook, too, because according to those campaign finance laws, he broke the law, too.
He broke the law. Yeah.
But really, that is the level at which these desperately ignorant, hateful welfare Wingnut Welfare mooches are scuttling around the bottom of the barrel trying to find anything they can hang their hat on. So when Hillary Clinton's email comes to nothing, then they'll find something else. They'll invent something else because they just really at this point just invent shit. But thanks to the FOIA of those emails, we find a lot of rich and wonderful things that have been said in the off the public record about what some of the advisors, especially Sidney Blumenthal,
yeah,
Hillary Clinton's close advisor, who the Obama people wouldn't let work for the Obama White House. They said, oh, no. He ain't working for us. Mm-hmm. So Hillary found him a job with the Clinton Global Initiative, apparently, because as I can tell you from my years living in Chicago, there will always be money in the banana In the banana shack.
And yeah, there will
always be a job at the post office or Streets and San or some commissioner somewhere.
Somebody sent you, that somebody knows.
There'll always be a job for you if somebody sent you.
If you're in the club.
Yeah.
And there's a club. We're not in it.
No.
Sidney Blumenthal is in it.
He's way, way, way up the top. But what's fascinating is the stuff that he said, this sort of the degree to which it was common parlance, common vocabulary at someone at his level talking to the then Secretary of State, I believe, about John Boehner and about the Tea Party and about shit like that. It was just like, and this is the thing that makes it funny and makes it infuriating at the same time is Sidney Blumenthal is talking to Hillary Clinton like a liberal blogger.
Absolutely.
And while behind closed doors, this is the way at least some people very, very high up in the government thought about conservatives, thought about Republicans.
Well, and tying this back to James O'Keefe, when James O'Keefe got the NPR guy fired, he was talking off the record about how crazy and racist the Tea Party is.
Yep.
And everybody knew that. Everybody knew that the Tea Party was an anti-Obama, anti-black, white supremacist group of people. Wasn't about taxed enough already.
Okay? Who up until 2 minutes before had been known as the Republican base.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
GOP base.
Exactly.
But the only, in 2010, the only people who were saying this shit, and I went back through my archives and found Chicago reporter Phil Ponce talking very seriously about this new grassroots movement called the Tea Party, and was featuring, and I have a post entitled, I believe, if memory serves me, Mike Royko leaps from the grave to cock punch Phil Ponce.
Yeah,
because it was just so completely obvious that these are not new people. They didn't just come from space. It's the same old Republican base who 10 minutes ago were completely cool with George Bush fucking this country up beyond repair.
Yep.
And never said a word. And then the black Democrat gets in the White House and they lost their fucking minds. Mm-hmm. That's who they are. They're ignorant, racist assholes. They're the same ignorant, racist assholes who freaked out when Bill Clinton was in office and fell for every dodge that was pimped out by every right-wing crackpot, right-wing billionaire back then who Filegate, Travelgate, Whitewater, the whole mess. Who never learned a goddamn thing, who all still believe in their heart of hearts that probably Barack Obama wasn't born in this country. He's probably a Muslim. And Hillary Clinton probably killed Vince Foster. These people have never, ever shaken from any of those beliefs. They just keep changing their war paint. So,
well, and now they're back in a winner, Driftglass.
But when you go back to 2010 and find that the only people saying this shit are despised outsider pariah liberals who no one will listen to. And then you find out, guess who else is saying this shit? Hillary Clinton.
Sidney Blumenthal on email.
Top personal advisor is telling her, John Boehner is an alcoholic, lazy douchebag who has no...
All the Republican conference hates.
Everyone hates him. He is a complete alcoholic wreck, and he's a disaster. And the Tea Party is nothing but the deranged fringe of the Republican Party taking over the party, run by racists and lunatics, and they're just the fucking worst people on earth. That's the sort of thing that the top advisor, one of the top advisors to the Secretary of State was saying off the record.
Yeah. And liberal, in other words, liberals were right all along, Driftglass.
Again. Fucking again.
And, hey, Driftglass, Sidney Blumenthal has also made us all smarter by using the word louche to describe John Boehner. Oh, and that is the most looked up word this week at Merriam-Webster's online. Louche apparently means rakish, a wastrel, that kind of thing. So,
okay.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Why didn't he use toper then instead of alcoholic,
Right.
How come that?
Okay, we got a lot of emails this week. Thank you. We will get through as many of them as we can today and probably continue this on through the next month or two, bringing your letters into the conversation. T.S. wrote us and said, this week in OMG WTF, we have a list.
Yeah.
Donald Trump meeting with a group of Latino business leaders and saying the way of fixing America is by promising Trail of Tears Latino.
Yeah, yeah. Which sounds like a great Quentin Tarantino movie.
It does, but, doesn't it? Danny Aiello?
Yeah. Danny Aiello is going to be in it.
Yeah.
He'll probably bring in Robert Rodriguez to direct.
Sure.
But I can't. I just... And by group of Latino business leaders, he means the 17% of Cuban refugees.
Yes, they're all Cuban.
/ complete right wing whack. They are to the Latino community what Alan Keyes
and is Alan to the African American community.
Yes, they're the ones that nobody wants to invite to Thanksgiving dinner because they're fucking crazy. But you put them together, you put them in a suit, you get them some right wing dollars, and they become the respectable faces
Latino
of the
business leaders. Right. Then T.S. also said Chris Christie wanting to tag Latinos like animals. That's being very kind to say like animals, as you said. Why don't we just tattoo numbers to their inside of their wrists?
Well, as you said, first we maybe have them sew something on their clothes.
Little felt eye for illegal on their sleeve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we provide them perhaps some train cars, some cattle cars of some kind to make their transportation easier.
I did love the t-shirt I saw online this week of a Hispanic American man at the airport, and he wore a t-shirt that said, "Relax, gringo, I'm legal." Elizabeth Hasselbeck is asking the question, Driftglass. Why is Black Lives Matter not considered a hate group?
Yeah, she would ask that question, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she absolutely would.
Just wait long enough, Blue Gal, and she will have her own show on MSNBC.
Absolutely. Maybe she could do the fourth hour of Morning Joe.
Yeah. No, she'll eventually... They'll get rid of Rachel Maddow, and it'll be
the Elizabeth Hasselbeck hour.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be good.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Mark my words. I was right about the Tea Party. Mark my words.
And the tragic shooting of a cop in Texas. Oh, it's Black Lives Matter. It's all their fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will add to this list. Nikki Haley gave a speech, and she's running for vice president.
Yes,
it's pretty obvious. Basically saying, yes, Black Lives Matter, and at the same time, voter ID isn't racist, and I want to join with Jesse Jackson and help everybody get an ID.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, then she also said that Black Lives Matter, the group, is actually the cause of the difficulties in Ferguson.
Sure, absolutely.
Now, I am not making that up.
Yeah. Because, that's what happens when you get cause and effect mixed up.
You know, it's just chaos over there because of the Black Lives Matter people. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
T.S. concludes, our media is a joke. I was terrified, and he calls you Driftglass, by the way.
Yay.
I was terrified when
it is not the worst thing I've been called this week.
When Driftglass last week said the media doesn't need us. Us as in the American people.
Yeah.
Then I thought about it, and he is completely right.
Yeah.
The next thing we know, Dick Cheney will be narrating children's books about Gitmo.
That's right. Gitmo will replace Elmo. And
Tickle me Gitmo.
Tickle me Gitmo. Yeah, we extracted a lot of confessions that saved American lives. I mean, and frankly, that I don't see that as terribly far off. Considering that he was Dick Cheney and his horrible little organ bank of a child,
You mean the mother and a patriot?
Yeah, she was a mother and a patriot. We're on the morning, your liberal TV, Morning Joe, this week, yesterday.
Which is being expanded to 4 hours. Yeah. Breaking news.
Let's include that. But Dick Cheney and his horrid little child were invited onto the Morning Joe show to take softball questions from Joe Scarborough and to pimp his horrible, horrible book. And they didn't ask him any hard questions. They didn't push him. But not that that would matter, because Dick Cheney's a soulless monster who cannot be embarrassed because he isn't human anymore. He is he really is a ghoul, a walking, shambling, smirking avatar of death on earth. And they pull up a chair for him and let him lie through his teeth and then laugh about how hale and hearty he looks. And then off to the next subject. What do you think about Joe Biden running for president? And that's television.
Yeah.
You know, that is putting Pinochet on television and asking him what he thought of the soccer game. It's unbelievable that this person isn't in prison, much less is out pimping a book with his horrible little daughter on morning television, and nobody's asking him any questions, because why?
Hey Drift Glass, so TS has a question for you.
Sure.
Did freedom of speech and freedom of the press really die after the Citizens United ruling?
Nah.
Because it seems like we have the unification of speech and the unification of the press under corporate control.
Nah. It's always been under threat. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Edward R. Murrow did not get a lot of applause for taking on Joe McCarthy.
Right.
He got ultimately fired for that. Mm-hmm. So it's always been the people at the top of corporate media have always been terrified of angry letters and having people in the government push, because they need government contracts. They need licenses. They need the government not to hate them. And they need to placate a very large section of their audience, because they are capitalists who believe in an infinite number of crazy, stupid things. So they can't come out and point the finger directly at the Republican Party and say, you people are the problem. You people are the problem. And the sooner we get rid of you people electorally, the sooner we find a way to get you the fuck out of our electoral process, as soon as your opinions stop being listened to, the quicker this country heals. They can't do that. So what they are stuck with is trying to play fair. Once upon a time, there was a thing that didn't work very well, but it was called the Fairness Doctrine. And it basically meant if Rush Limbaugh is allowed to go on the air and spew a bunch of bullshit for an hour, then the other side should at least get a shot at countering that in somewhat roughly equal terms. That's not all it ever meant. But it was a general principle that you just can't have an outright raving propaganda network running amok, especially on the public airwaves, and without any counter to it. There's no pushback to it. They're just going to let them roll. And Reagan killed
it. But they have replaced that.
Reagan killed it.
It seems to me, yeah. The Fairness Doctrine was more of the death of free speech and freedom of the press than Citizens United. Yeah.
And then it became... then the press became, being in the media became a millionaire's game. Go back to broadcast news. Go back to Jack Nicholson in broadcast news talking about the massive layoffs at the station. And the producer or director or owner or whatever suggesting that if he took a small pay cut, he could save some of those jobs. And Nicholson just looked death at him. Oh, just kidding. I'm just kidding. It was just a sick joke. I was just kidding. It's a business.
Yeah.
And it is a business that is in business to make money. And it's in business to make sure the people at the top make a lot of money.
Hey, I've got a kind of a Monty Python-esque idea, Driftglass.
Yeah, Blue Gal?
What if a news network decided to simply put the blonde with the biggest tits on the TV news?
Yeah, we got that.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Putting nine of the biggest titted blondes on the same network at the same or 17
130 big titted blondes in mini skirts. I've got it.
And
sitting cross-legged on a sofa
while you stare down my dress and
or up my skirt
on through the glass tabletop that Roger Ailes has put there specifically so you can look up at my cooch, because that's just good TV. I will read you what our dear leader Roger Ailes wants you to believe today. And it's perfect. You can jerk off to my Hooters while I tell you why Barack Obama is
the worst president in history.
It's the perfect product for American fascists. And it's also very profitable. That's what Roger Ailes
That's why he has a job after all.
You can actually make money selling poison to morons.
All right. Jay-Z writes.
Hey, Jay-Z.
Since I was born in 1979, bless your heart, I never got to know the TV journalism from the Murrow and Cronkite eras. Was it really much different from today's corporate news models? I have to think a lot about whether ethics in journalism ever really existed among a majority of journalists. The same way we were taught in school that the court system is politically isolated. We've had the notion of both those ideas obliterated here in Wisconsin, with the constant pouring of nonsense from conservative-funded media outlets and the conservative-funded judges on our state Supreme Court. Of course, the U.S. Supreme Court has its obvious political bends as well, but the willful blindness by the media is so depressing, especially since more than half of Americans still turn the TV on for news.
Yeah.
Well, there was a nonprofit angle to news.
There was.
You were required to have half an hour a day
of
public service programming. Yeah. Right? And that was part of the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, well,
right?
And it was part of the, we will give you the airwaves in exchange.
Yeah, the FCC ruling,
You have to use part of this enormous license to print money we're going to give you.
Mm-hmm.
A little piece of it has to serve the public interest.
Right.
And
right.
There is a, whoever it was on the Sunday morning show, the Sunday morning on MSNBC.
On Up with Crusades, or not Chris,
Up with Kornacki. It was one of the jumped up, quote unquote, Latino businessmen, who was talking about how things have changed and how journalists are being partisan.
Oh yeah, and he had to read. He wanted who to read the Fairness Doctrine. There was someone he wanted to read the Fairness Doctrine.
And he said, you know,
Jeb Bush, I think.
Cronkite. Well, no, this was. He was bitterly complaining that journalists should be more objective. That means, you know, the very few who call Republicans out on their bullshit shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Jorge Ramos. That was it. It was Jorge Ramos getting kicked out of the Donald Trump press conference. Mm-hmm. And so McCain's former advisor, I did find this.
Thank you.
McCain's former advisor was on Jonathan Capehart, who was substituting for Steve Kornacki.
Yes.
And this guy is named Adolfo Franco. I am not making that up. Adolfo Franco wanted Jorge Ramos to read the Fairness Doctrine.
Yes, which doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't exist anymore.
He was killed by, you know, if his first name is Adolf, and his last name should be Batista, frankly. His middle name should be Reagan. And that's how star-spangled, all-American right-wing this guy was. But it was Cronkite would never do those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And immediately, everyone on the Twitter said, but hey, dumbass, Cronkite told America that we couldn't win the Vietnam
War. We couldn't win the Vietnam War.
So shut your fucking hole. I mean, and of course, no one on the show was impolite enough to point that he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. But again, it was another Republican making up history to conveniently pretend that this was the first time this ever happened.
Yeah.
And I remember Dan Rather. Young Dan Rather going toe-to-toe with Richard Nixon at press.
Oh, yeah. Nixon hated Rather.
He hated him.
Hated him.
And I remember Nixon smirking and saying, are you running for something, Mr. Rather? And Rather coming right back, no, are you?
Yeah.
And that was like, ooh. Yeah. But he didn't get fired.
No, but George W. Bush changed all of that.
He
brought the press corps, the White House press corps, and turned them into lapdogs by denying access if you didn't play the game.
Yeah. Well, and before him, Reagan, there used to be, as I recall, this truth squadding procedure that White House press reporters would sort of barrage the president with questions. And the Reagan's people said, no, we're not putting up with that anymore. You're making him look bad, and you're making America look bad. And they just browbeat them into no longer asking Reagan any more hard questions.
Yeah.
And Bush carried it further. And Clinton wasn't exactly opening the doors of the White House. But as the press corps has gotten more and more incestuously involved with the Washington power structure, the reporting they do is more and more corporate. I don't think it's partisan. I think it's simply corporate. There is a message. There's a corporate message which they will report, because the only people they care about are the people in the Beltway and in New York City and a few other places. They don't give a shit about you or me or anybody. Anybody, you know, west of the Hudson River, they don't give a shit about it at all. They're only talking to themselves about themselves. And the story that Washington wants to tell itself is that it is a beleaguered town full of good-hearted people, mm-hmm. and that really both sides are to blame for every fucking thing that goes wrong. And that's the only story they want to hear, and therefore that's the only story they are going to tell. And anyone who tells them anything different is not allowed to play. Right. And is put at the children's table or kicked out entirely. That's why David Brooks has an infinite backstage pass. That's why Dick Cheney gets to come on Morning Joe anytime he wants, and liberals can't get within a parsec of a network microphone or a camera ever, even though we have a really long and storied history of being right about almost everything.
Hey, Drift Class, we're going to do just a little bit of a lightning round.
All right.
Because there's some things that have come up as we are recording this on Thursday.
Yes.
Kim Davis is going to jail. Your reaction?
You know, I look forward to her best-selling novel.
There have been, you had two ideas that I tweeted.
Yes.
One was
Notes from a Lexington Jail.
Notes from a Kentucky Jail. I said, and then what was the other
my
one?
My Struggle.
My Struggle. That,
my Galburn Struggle. Yeah.
Somebody replied and said, I love this one. Bride, 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 and Prejudice.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, God is such a bad fiction writer.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
I think you said this. This is Kurt Vonnegut writing reality.
That's what I was hypothesizing about this week. Is Kurt Vonnegut in heaven writing what's happening in the world?
You know what? Let's not make a Kentucky clerk oppose gay marriage. Just period. Let's make her a married four-time illegitimate child with the most incredibly non-biblical, hoary history you could imagine.
Yeah.
Standing up and say, but I ain't going to marry no fags.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because Maury Povich's, says not to.
Maury Povich's tongue went dry when he read this woman's story because she had, I mean, look, her personal life story is not an issue in this.
It's irrelevant.
She is breaking the law.
Exactly. Well, her personal life story is relevant because of where she chose to draw the line.
Exactly. What she decided to stand upon.
The high moral ground.
The Bible and God and Jesus.
Yeah.
And it is so much worse than just four marriages.
Yeah.
It is married to husband number one, pregnant with babies from husband number husband number three, mm-hmm. divorces husband number one, 5 months later gives birth to the babies of husband number three.
Uh-huh.
Marries husband number two, who adopts babies from husband number three, divorces husband number two, marries husband number three, divorces husband number three, marries back now with husband number two.
Yeah.
So she actually married one guy twice.
Yeah.
In those four marriages.
It's Hillbilly Brady Bunch is what
it's Hillbilly Brady Bunch.
And
this is the person who is standing up for traditional marriage.
I don't
right?
marry no gays because of the
right.
Bible.
Because God told
you
me.
Know what, yep. What else? God told everyone to stone people like you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But that's the thing. It doesn't occur to her that mm-hmm. her own complete failure to live up to any biblical principles that she proposes, that she wants to hold everyone else to, has anything to do with her right to deny you your marriage. Because she's yep. a fucking Republican, she's a fucking conservative, she calls herself a Christian, and therefore I am forgiven, and
yep.
you are not. And it's people like this who need to stop participating in the public debates, because this bitch, pardon my language, is the problem. She mm-hmm. is the problem. And the sooner we get rid of the problem, we start having a country that we can govern again. But hey,
yeah.
you know, she'll go to jail, she'll get out, she'll become a congressman from her district, she'll write a best-selling book, she'll get her own show on Fox, she might have a reality show with Sarah Palin, my 19 kids, maybe the Duggars have a place for her in their contract. It's that whole cesspit needs to be walled off.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you do it, but I can tell you, if you want to double this country's IQ overnight, take Republicans out of the picture.
Yep. Well, and let's go to issue two.
Yeah.
Donald Trump signed the Republican loyalty pledge this morning.
Oh, bless his heart. Did he sign it in urine or disappear?
Well, you know.
Yes.
It's easy for him to break this, just like he had his pact with Fox News. He just says, well, yeah, but I was untreated fairly by the unfairly by the Republican Party, so...
I'll see you in court.
These guys aren't nice people. Right. Yeah. These guys aren't nice people, well, so I'm going to break my agreement with them.
And all he has to do is say, I'm going to make a better Republican... I'm going to get rid of the old Republican Party and make a better one that's going to be great.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
The old Republican Party, you know, we're going to bulldoze it. We're going to put in a much better party that will be spectacular. Everybody will love it. And that's, you know, and he get so I don't, why would he? Yeah, this is so irrelevant. This is Reince Priebus trying to maintain the illusion that there is such a thing as the Republican Party and he's in charge of anything. And he's not. He's a punk. He's an empty suit in charge of an empty party run by oligarchs who are busy fighting over who the next person to be is going to be. They're going to run for president to lose to the Democratic nominee. Mm-hmm. That's all this is. It's mm-hmm. a show. It's a big fucking puppet show. And it's scary and it's dangerous and it's funny all at once.
Rick Perry, Driftglass.
Yes.
Was on Fox today. Uh-huh. And he was asked, Donald Trump claims that you're getting out of the race.
I'm not dead.
And Rick Perry said, a broken clock is right once a day.
Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ.
No, I'm not. A broken clock is not worth
it. No.
I have three times that a broken clock is right. You know 12 what? Hours, 12 hours, and I forget.
Even a blind squirrel can find a Chevy every now and then. What? What?
This man is an idiot. Yeah.
When, okay. When weren't you dropped on your head, Rick Perry? Yeah.
Just asking the question.
Yeah. But, you know, but he's not dead yet. I'm not dead. I'm not at all. Well, he's not.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I want to just get back to the Kurt Vonnegut thing again uh-huh. for one moment, okay. because the reason I said that initially, that Kurt Vonnegut was somehow writing the course of the political world from some desk somewhere in the great beyond.
Uh-huh.
When Kanye West announces his candidacy for the presidency, mm-hmm. 5 years ahead of time at the Video Music Awards,
uh-huh.
a candidate whose wife is known for her selfies.
Yes, and her butt.
And her butt. Mm-hmm. She's clearly, this is all clearly Vonnegut's doing. I blame Vonnegut, okay?
Yeah, well, yeah. I blame Vonnegut, too. He left behind. Or Kilgore Trout. Well, let's blame Kilgore Trout.
That's better, isn't it? All right, we have one more question.
Yes.
Our friend Kevin Holtzinger asks.
Kevin! Yeah.
Do you really feel your blogging career has accomplished as little as you frequently claim it has? Driftglass. And if not, what do you think it has accomplished? Because Driftglass gets kind of bleak at times.
Uh-huh.
And I think it might do some good, he doesn't say for whom, to hear him be positive.
I'm positive my blogging career has accomplished as little as...
Driftglass, it got me. You got me.
I was promised Wine, Women, and Song, and I've gotten all three of those things.
Have you?
Well,
okay.
I've gotten celebrity. Mm-hmm. No, not really, but to a certain degree. I have gotten a lovely woman.
Yes, you have.
Who I suckered into marrying me, which is awesome.
You've got her.
I got somebody sent me a bottle of whiskey that one time.
That one time. It was really good whiskey,
and that was really
too.
Good. And... Mm-hmm. Every now and then I do a fundraiser or we do a podcast thing and people, for some reason, send us money. Sometimes it's $3. Sometimes it's $30.
This week, somebody did send us $3 and they said specifically to tell Driftglass, here's your $3.
Yeah, I'm forwarding it right along. I'm not sure who to forward it along to. I'm sure MoveOn will tell me. I'm betting it's Alan Grayson. It's
Alan
either
Grayson.
To defeat the Iran filibuster or to celebrate. the winning of the Rand, or maybe the Bears need a quarterback. I don't know really.
Yeah, what, something like that.
Something this week. But I think that blogging as a form of media died about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of...
And it didn't die. It just moved.
Yeah, well, it's become...
It moved to social media.
Yeah, it's become Twitter.
Yeah. And Facebook. A lot of people get their politics from Facebook these days, which is shocking. But yes,
I'm still in historic Williamsburg, churning butter by hand, and it's not coming back. I mean, I have no illusion that suddenly people are going to go, hey, you know what we want? You know what we want to do? Read long essays by this guy named Driftglass about politics. But it is a place where I can go every day that I control. that where I can express my opinions, which over the course of 10 years, more than 10 years, I think has proven to be pretty good. My writing.
Well, and Driftglass, one of your readers compared your blog to a fine old establishment where you can get a really good single malt.
Yeah.
And it is that. Yeah. So, and it's yours.
Mine.
So
it's entirely mine.
There. So there. Yeah.
Until, you know, until Mr. Robot's hacks destroy it all. I think very little. I think there's a. I think 5 years from now, 3 years from now, we're going to look back on the Obama administration and be amazed at what a overall decent president he was. How much better he was than we deserved. Even though there are glaring mistakes and really big issues on which we take huge exception and there's always disappointment, I think liberals did that. I think liberals got him elected. Liberals got him reelected. And there's some small pride in being some small part of that. I think we – this is an analogy I used earlier today when I was on a different show, but it's the one that you and I talked about. Liberals are like the – batteries in the Apollo 13. We are there's not much left in them. they're pretty much drained, but if we flip the switches in the right order and do it deliberately, and if we focus our energy very carefully and thoughtfully and strategically, if we do it just right, we can still save the ship. But we have to stop scattering our energies every which way and focus on two or three things that can substantially change the trajectory of our political conversation, because we can never solve problems if the problems are not allowed to be recognized as problems in the public square.
And that's why I admire Bernie Sanders so much, is that he has really stuck to his guns on that, even when his supporters have not. And he has stuck to his guns and not made this an anti-Hillary Clinton campaign. He's really about the issues, and he's going to stick to that. And, you know, I said this to you, and I'm going to announce this on the podcast. I am voting for Bernie Sanders as long as he is on a ballot. And when he is not on the ballot for president of the United States, if that happens, I'm going to vote for the candidate that I believe Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders will be voting for.
It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that.
And we're not going to get ugly and bloody and personal.
No.
And we're going, I mean, that's, let's.
Oh, I'm going to get ugly and bloody and personal about Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but,
so, yeah,
but
on, damn right.
On this side of the aisle, Bernie, the greatest thing Bernie Sanders has done so far, which he's done an enormous number of good things and against overwhelming odds, really, against very long odds, is he's staying on policy issues. He's really, really focusing on public policy issues, things you can do when you are elected, when you're president, the way you can change the laws, and again, the trajectory of the country.
And a candidate who insists on that trains the media to do the same.
Yeah.
And that has been another contribution. And people know better now than to ask Bernie Sanders about hair.
Yes, or pantsuits.
Right.
He's not going to answer that question.
No. And I'm going to shame you for asking it.
And that's – so that in a very, very small way, that's what we can do as liberals. I muse every now and then what would happen if every – liberal blogger, poster, podcaster, Twitterer, and radio person, and even on the little TV stations that are at the way end of the dial, were to focus their attention on getting Bill Kristol fired for a week. Just, we're not going to talk about anything other than, first of all, getting Bill Kristol fired, and second, let's drag out into the light the people who decided to hire him and keep him on the air. Let's find out who they are. And let's interview them. Let's call them. Let's email them. Let's, as journalists, insist on interviews. And every time that Jonathan Greenberger doesn't want to talk about it, we publish that as his response. We've asked Mr. Greenberger about his decision to hire Bill Kristol, and he has nothing to say on the issue. And we keep it up for a week.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's the pelt that I would go after.
But what I'm saying is, Don't you think it would make a difference if the only story you could read
on every blog, was that, on every outlet, on every Facebook post, everywhere was fire this person.
And not just, you know, not just fuck you, but a bill of particulars, a list of grave crimes.
All the times he fucked up.
Well, and crimes against journalism and truth and American decency that Bill Kristol has been steeped in for his entire career. Why is this bloodthirsty, lying thug on television at all, Mr. Greenberger? Please answer that question. And we're going to keep asking until we get a goddamn answer. And, well, I think he's a smart guy. It's not an answer. Answer the question. What do you think about his this position and this position and this position and this position? And the more they don't want to talk about it, the more that becomes the story. Now, that's never going to happen. But that's just one example of if we focused our goddamn attention and did what James O'Keefe did. You know, he found some poor schlub at Acorn who gave him the time of day. And a year later, they were out of business.
Yep.
That's evil, but it's focus. You know, there is some, and he had a media outlet who was willing to back him and back him and back him. Imagine what would happen if we liberals were to, for a week, just focus our attention on one thing.
Attainable thing.
One attainable.
Because I would want to focus on campaign finance reform, but that's going to take a lot longer than a week.
Anyway, we have a lot of energy and strength that's sort of scattered around, but we need to do it thoughtfully and deliberately and strategically in service of a larger, longer vision.
And I would be happy if liberals on Facebook would focus their attention on income inequality and corporate personhood rather than on Hillary's this and Bernie's this and, you know, the other person is evil or the other person is divisive and
policy, stop. issue.
Policy, issue. Okay.
Happy 300th, Blue Gal.
I love you so much.
I love you, too.
I just do.
All right. Let's bring this in for a landing, shall we?
Before we bring it in for a landing, we have three clips to play.
Okay.
The first two are from Magnolia ePublishing, and this one he entitles Quotes from Driftglass.
It should come bound in a little red book, but it won't ever happen. About one of the early gaffes that Daley said, you know, Chicagoans want a white mayor who can sit down with anybody.
Oh, my God.
And his press people insisted that he said a wet mayor. You know, there was a joke floating around about a couple of weeks ago before Egypt and about Republicans filibustering the bill to stop the meteor that's going to head to the earth, to hit the earth, because that would make Barack Obama look good. You know, my favorite commenters are the one who sort of wing in well-intentioned and say, you forgot such and so. And there's always, of course I did, because I can't write a novel out of every post. You know, I got to keep it to the point where I can eventually put a period on it and walk away.
Yep.
My favorite joke, because I invented it, is Dick Cheney is filmed on the White House lawn throwing burning kittens at homeless veterans. What are the first three words out of David Broder's mouth? And they are, but the Democrats.
People of Earth, this is Driftglass speaking. This is the podcast. Don't listen to it at work unless you want to get your ass fired. This is why I'm not allowed to do these recordings.
It's the Driftglass and Blue Gal podcast.
Okay, so this next clip from Magnolia ePublishing is entitled Blue Gal Loses It.
Yay.
this is my million-dollar laugh that some people hate and other people love.
I don't care what they think. Alan Keyes, he's Alan Colmes, Alan Keyes' love child. You know, when one crazy person and one completely spineless person love each other very much, they make a baby. And
just think about how much more fucking incredible this would feel if the Bears had won the Super Bowl too. Well, I was so mad at David fucking Brooks this past Sunday, I folded three baskets of laundry.
Yeah, nothing worse than angry laundry. Angry laundry.
I stopped back to the bedroom and closed the door, and I just...
Uh-huh.
You came back about 20 minutes later. Are you mad at me about something? No, I'm mad at David Brooks. Listen, kitten, if I tell you I'm a feminist, damn it.
Look, Blue Gal. He said in the most condescending way. Look, Blue Gal. Both sides have IQ.
My son was in the room with me while we were watching Keith Olbermann, and there was Sarah Palin on the TV, and he said, Mom, he's 11, he said, Mom, that's Sarah Palin, and I said, yeah. He said, Dad says she's an idiot. And I said, yeah, I kind of think she's an idiot, too. And then Keith Olbermann comes on the TV and says, that woman is an idiot. And my son just lost it. It was just, we need to give her our full support. I can't say this without bursting out laughing. She has gained the endorsement of John Bolton.
Well. 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 Can Pammy Atlas be far from her? Have you seen the guns on this woman? This is... Seriously, have you seen the guns on her? Gun show!
Gun show!
Finally, we have a clip from our friend Kevin Holtzinger. He did this many moons ago. It's up at YouTube. It is the Driftglass and Blue Gal porn cast.
I swear that's where the money is.
Yeah. Waka jawaka. Mm-hmm.
It's the Professional Left Porncast with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I so want to do the whole show just talking like this because I can feel my genitals getting engorged. But in a bipartisan deep kind of way.
I think I'm going to have to edit that out. Exchange safe words. Cindy lied and said hers is fiscal responsibility. You crack me up, BFF.
Then I grew hair in places I never thought I would. Discovered girls, and suddenly it all looked really ridiculous. Yeah. Well, that's his favorite old porn.
Yeah.
You know, that's the dog-eared copy of his favorite stroke mag that he that he now gets to pull out.
We're going to hell. That's all I have to say. I'm lying there and I'm ready to go to sleep and I'm about in a coma and you pull out a paperback copy of Ayn Rand's Capitalism and I looked at you and I went, you are not going to read that to me now.
Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, yes, I am.
It says here right on
the hell you are.
It says right here on page 200, Blue Gal. When she says no, she really means no. And if I'm powerful enough to take what is mine, then it is mine by right. This isn't being recorded, is it?
No.
You're hotter than a burning oil rig. I'm going to put you out, but not that fast.
I got a nice hose for you for 8 months. I'm
going to have to drill a couple of secondary wells there. I take till Christmas.
All right, Driftglass. Thank you to all of you for listening for 300 episodes or for however long you've been on board. We appreciate your love and support, your kind words.
And we have a few Ask Me Anythings in the chamber, but we haven't gotten a lot, so we're going to wait a week.
Yeah, we'll do some more. We'll just do some more.
However many we get in the chamber is what we'll do in the next week or two.
Yeah, and thank you. Mm-hmm. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Amani. Amani, by the way, is clearly a relative of Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper, our cat, mm-hmm. our black cat. Mm-hmm. They have exactly the same face. And Amani is sitting at the bottom of a wicker laundry basket and saying, claim.
Claim. Mine. What are you talking about?
What? And then what? You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, even on Labor Day,
yes.
we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service.
Go Postal
Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Go all unions!
Yeah.
Woo! Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. Driftglass, somebody bought a laptop and emailed us and said, by the way, I used your link to buy a laptop.
And by the way, I have gotten a couple of inquiries on my blog about that damn Amazon link, and I will put it up this week, I promise.
Okay.
Because I really do appreciate people going out of their way to try to...
I sent it to you.
You did. And I just haven't done it yet because I'm a very bad person.
But it is at professionalleft.blogspot.com,
right.
So you can go over there and get
it. It's two clicks away.
We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link. if your alternative is a big box store. Yep. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with an actual PayPal or check contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Driftglass, we don't do this for the money.
Nope, believe me.
Obviously, but we do it for the love, but we appreciate your support. Thank you so much. Please rate our show wherever you listen to it, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties insist that if Carly Fiorina gets to use the goddamn good litter box, everybody gets to use the good litter box.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogface Herman has some time travel movies and TV shows. And let's see if you can recognize these shows.
All right.
All right, there's six of them.
Okay.
Number one.
Take me back. How do you propose to do that? By force? Be reasonable, John. We don't belong here. We violated...
We don't belong here.
Let me show you something.
Palestine terrorists carried out their threat and began shooting the first five of 106 Israeli schoolchildren held hostage for 18 days in a...
We've just received word that Mayor Griffin Margolin of Columbus, Ohio was shot...
We don't belong here. On the contrary, Herbert, I belong here completely and utterly. I'm home. It's you who do not belong here. You, with your absurd notions of a perfect and harmonious society. It's drivel.
Oh, yeah. That's Malcolm McDowell, and I forget the other guy's name.
David Warner.
David Warner. And Mary Steenburgen.
Yes, but
right?
She's not in this clip, but yes, she's the female love interest in this movie.
In Time After Time.
That's correct.
Very good movie. And for those of you out there who are time travel nerds, remember, this will be the first of two times when Mary Steenburgen falls in love with a time traveler.
That's correct.
Just so you know.
This is 1979. Malcolm McDowell plays H.G. Wells, and David Warner plays Jack the Ripper.
Yes, Jack the Ripper intersects with time travel a lot.
Yeah, and also with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah,
a lot.
And it makes sense because he was a real person.
Yep.
But
yep.
The central mystery of what happened remains technically unsolved, and therefore a very ripe place to plant fiction.
All right, let's try number two.
It is without life.
An external projection?
No, an after image.
After image?
Yes, it lived once.
Who were you?
Surely you can see you as a soldier.
Who were you? Who am I more like? No. Sorry, but you're dead. Who were you?
At least give the poor lad a chance.
Please, let him do it his way.
You might as well tell me.
Reckon you might as well find out for yourself.
I have no idea.
This is a show, I haven't seen this, and now I want to go look at it on YouTube. Sapphire and Steel, 1979, same year Time After Time came out.
Yeah, I was going to guess a British TV show.
Because it's got a Doctor Who vibe to it, yeah.
I can hear, I think I can hear the sort of clickety-clack of footsteps echoing off of plywood, which is sort of the signature of a small studio with props that are not made of real metal or whatever.
Right, right. So, in the 70s. Yeah, sure. So Sapphire and Steel, Dogface Sherman says, this is actually a decent TV series if you can get past what is possibly the worst opening of a show ever made. It's British television science fiction fantasy series starring David McCallum of Man Ooh. From U.N.C.L.E. fame
Ooh.
As Steel.
Yeah.
And Joanna Lumley, who was in AbFab, Absolutely Fabulous, as okay. the woman who hasn't eaten since the Nixon administration.
Yeah.
All of her lunches are liquid, darling.
That's right.
And she plays Sapphire. And they are intergalactic heroes who are there to, you know, rescue everybody. So
sure. Why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't you? All right. Number three.
She asks him about his necklace, the combat necklace he wore at the start of this war, which is to break out someday. He invents an explanation. They walk. They look at the trunk of a sequoia tree covered with historical dates. She pronounces an English name he doesn't understand. As in a dream, he shows her a point beyond the tree, hears himself say, "This is where I come from." And falls back exhausted.
Oh, yeah. This is La Jetée.
That's correct. 1962.
A series of pictures.
Yeah, and it is the, Dogface Sherman says, this is the best movie on the list for today.
Yeah. Yeah.
The inspiration for Terry Gilliam's wonderful movie, 12 Monkeys, one of my favorites. Dogface Sherman says, as far as the 12 Monkeys TV show is concerned, I watched one episode. Yeah, that's kind of where I went.
Yeah.
I watched a couple and I was like, okay, they really didn't need to do this. But
give it a shot. No, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number four is kind of an oddball. Try this one.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you. Well, that's just a sample of what's coming, fellas. The world is going to be chock full of miracles, useful miracles like the printing press, sewing machine, bathtubs.
Bathtubs?
Yeah.
You mean we're all going to have to take baths?
Every single Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Bing Crosby.
Obviously, yeah. That's
like a douche in a mediocre movie edition of Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Right. This is the 1949 version.
Yeah. I would have guessed late 40s, early 50s, yeah.
This is the 1949 version. Bing Crosby gets whacked on the head and travels back in time. This movie uses Gilligan's Island level of technology in regards to time travel, says Dogface Herman. And then he has a question for you. He says, Bing Crosby is supposed to be charming in this movie, but really comes across as a jerk. I'm ashamed to say I never read the book. Is Bing Crosby meant to be an ugly American?
Yeah.
I think he is. Yeah. And so this is late Mark Twain. Is that right?
Yeah. This is in the latter part of his career when he had not given up on humanity, but pretty much thought that we were a fatally flawed species and screwed up a lot. It's been a long, long time since I read the book. But as I recall, the first part of it is overthrowing monarchical tyranny. But what he replaced it with turned out to be pretty horrifying. So it was a fairly bleak picture of how humans govern themselves, which I'm not surprised was turned into a kids' movie.
Yeah,
that I saw. I bet you I saw it on Family Classics, which was one of those Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, WGN, World's Greatest Network, Chicago, hosted by Frazier Thomas, as I recall. And it was one of those shows where you would see this movie, The Time Machine, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and shows like that. I think the Sink the Bismarck and a couple of robot movies. Big
quality entertainment for Sunday afternoon youth viewing.
For families. It was family fare. Yeah. Mr. Robot would not have been shown.
No.
On Family Classics.
All right, let's try number five.
Carolyn, we have seen David's grave.
Why are you laughing?
Carolyn, stop it.
1970 was so long ago.
You remember it.
It was 5 years after 1965 and 10 years before 1980.
Carolyn, what would happen if we went back to 1970?
What year is this?
Carolyn, it's 1995.
Then why do you want to go back there? I don't want to leave here. I don't want to live through that again.
Oh, yeah, this has got to be Dark Shadows.
This has got to be Dark Shadows. It is.
This is straight up soap opera plus weirdness plus time travel. And I can't think of anything else that it could qualify other than Dark Shadows.
It's a cool show. And Duckface Terman asks, is it strange that I really, really like this show? No, it's not strange at all. It's a cult classic. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, this is this. And I can't imagine there would ever be anything like it again.
No, probably not.
Soap opera with a vampire at the heart of it, a real vampire at the heart of it.
Well, I mean, they are trying on some networks to do that kind of thing, you know. But yeah, it's not in this campy sort of way. It would be really hard to duplicate. All right, last one, number six.
Are you a
space lady?
Hello,
no.
Oh no.
No, I repair time leaks.
Sounds exciting.
No, it's not, really. It's quite dull. This is the only perk of the job.
What is?
Meeting famous people from history.
Me?
I read that you would be in here on this day, and I just couldn't pass up a chance of meeting Ray the Great.
So, what other famous people like me have you met? Have you met Einstein? Or Elvis. Have you met Elvis? You know what you should do? You should go back and kill Hitler. That's a classic.
That's also a time crime.
You're no fun.
I have no idea. One of the actors' voice sounds really familiar, but I can't.
This is a relatively new movie. It's Frequently Asked Questions About Time Travel from 2009. I think you and I watched the end of this movie once.
Okay, possibly.
Dr. H. Sherman says, fun movie worth watching. So
okay.
Yeah, and it's three nerds in a pub. It's Irish, and three nerds in a pub, and they meet a time-traveling hot blonde who turns them into heroes. Okay.
That's a very efficient form of writing.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Dogface Terman. We deeply appreciate your contribution.
As always.
The show, as always, yeah. And we watched the Mr. Robot finale, season finale last night.
We certainly did.
And my reaction was... that and I, you know, spoiler alert, probably will be spoilers in this. This show is about hacking a major banking corporation and bringing it down to cancel everyone's debt and upend the world financial stratus, right?
Well, it's to crash the global financial system.
Right.
And make it irretrievably destroyed.
Right. And through technology.
Yep.
And, you know, there was in this particular show, this episode, a lot of celebration of that among the hoi polloi.
Yeah.
And it's, we don't know, as often is the case in this show, what to believe and what not to believe, how much of this is hallucination on the part of the main character, Elliot. Mm-hmm. But it rang a little weird to me in that... You know, I think most people, if they had a choice of, yes, we'll cancel all your debts, but you won't be able to use an ATM card or credit card forever, would turn that down and not be happy about it. I mean, the people choose oppression over chaos all the time.
Yeah, especially if it's Facebook oppression. You know, sure, I'll give you my social security number and birth information. And,
oh, God.
Give me a T-shirt and some likes, you know, whatever. Really? Wow, you're selling yourself awfully cheap there.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact, again, trying to very delicately step around spoiling anything, that it's not as chaotic as you would think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I think our protagonist said, really? So... This is what a revolution looks like, a bunch of well-dressed people running around, kind of confused. There's still this, we're still in the place in the show where the majority of people have faith that someone will come along and fix this. Because it can't possibly be otherwise. It is unimaginable that it would be otherwise. And I am reminded of the fact that that which has been encrypted can be decrypted if you own the decryption key.
Mm-hmm.
And I that's a good one.
Yeah,
and the fact that the other half of the hacking army, White Rose,
yes,
shows up in the most unexpected place.
Fascinating.
It is. Yeah. I won't say anything more than that because I would spoil it. I will say that there's some interesting parallel construction in this show. There are, for example, two fireplaces in this show. One where unwanted puppies go, and one around which the plutocrats who rule the world gather to talk about how they're going to manipulate this country and that country.
Well, and I think the show does a really good job of putting into context why Evil Corp is evil. It's not because they're rich.
No.
It's not because they're at the top of the economic heap. It is because they dehumanize people.
Yes.
People can be bought and sold and thrown away and murdered and removed and manipulated and whatever. It is inhuman. The character who represents in this particular episode Evil Corp literally buys blood with money.
He does.
Literally buys human body parts with cash on the table.
Yeah.
In a prostitution sort of way.
And because that just won't do. So here's some money.
To make this blood go away. Right.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Did you think after watching this episode that it was justified? And it doesn't have to be justified. Everyone can make their own choices. I'm not suggesting that it has to be justified.
Sure.
But did you think that it was necessary in your own mind to delay this episode a week?
I think it was in good taste.
Okay.
And I think it was in both excellent in terms of respect, but also if the two incidents have very little to do with each other.
That's what I thought. I was like, there weren't a lot of parallels.
No. However,
to what you saw on the screen in one instance and what you saw on the screen that was real in terms of Virginia and the tragedy there. Yeah.
And there have been any number of incidents, and a very recent one of a reporter or a financial person or someone going on camera and
offing themselves
on
that's
camera.
That's a spoiler, yeah.
But I think it was the degree to which our media will obsess over trivial similarities. It was smart to distance themselves in terms of in time from something that would clutter up the actual aesthetic appreciation of the art itself. And I think that was smart and it was respectful.
If I was deeply, deeply cynical about this show, I would say it was good publicity for the show.
Yeah.
But at that point in time, this particular show doesn't need that kind of publicity.
No,
it has already taken over the summer terms of...
It already has Ashley Madison and the Chinese stock market.
Here's the thing.
This is really kind of interesting.
Well, no, I was just thinking in terms of attention and ratings and media attention.
Yeah.
This show had already won the Triple Crown of those things before this happened. Yeah.
This is a show... I mean, lots of shows are sort of take place in current times, right? You know, they're not really specific about what year it is or what month it is, but by the suits they wear and whatever's going on around them. This show is set right now, which will make it interesting 5 years from now.
It's
something you will go back and watch, and because it is right.
Yeah, it mentioned the Ashley Madison hack.
Yeah.
In this week's episode, crazy.
And you have world leaders on tape being cut into the narrative. So it is very deliberately setting itself in the current moment in a way that other shows just don't. Absolutely don't. I mean, period pieces do because, you know, that's what Mad Men was. But setting yourself in the immediate present time and saying very carefully, it's like holding up a newspaper saying, this is about today.
That's
really risky when you're doing fiction. I thought it was incredibly impressive. The show all the way through, all nine episodes, I think. I don't know where they're going to go. Again, they haven't run out of places to go. It's just that there's a lot of doors they left open, a lot of possibilities they left open.
Yeah.
And it is clear that the villains in this show are the ones who – just don't acknowledge humanity as anything worth anything other than how to make a profit. They view the trivial lives of human beings, and they said it all the way through the show.
Like from cockroaches.
These are just, you know, the lives of ordinary people are just like bugs. And they are profit and loss. And it is one thing to hear that, see corporations behave that way. It is entirely different to be privy to the conversations of the people who run these organizations, that hear them talk that way. And that's what's so mesmerizing about this. It is, you're listening to the private one-on-one conversations of incredibly powerful people who tell you, essentially, right and wrong mean nothing in my world.
Well, and you and I have, in real life, read about this at Davos.
Oh, yeah.
That they talk about the left behind. You know, they're just going to be left behind in the global economy because progress must happen. And it's, you think that, no, those are human beings. Those are people who live and die and have children and parents and care about, you know, why don't we care about that? No. We're talking about, and I mean, David Brooks talks about people like they're people on a chessboard, you know, move them around.
And the idea that the problem that these people at the very, very, very top have is faking humanity long enough to relate to human beings.
It's to speak at a funeral of a person that they couldn't care less about.
It's exhausting for them to... they like letting their hair down among fellow people who all agree that 99% of humanity should just get the fuck off their planet. And the idea that that our one of our villains throws money at this woman. I'll tell you why. But the idea that she has been through a horrifically traumatic experience up close, literally like 6 hours before.
Or less.
And his response is, you're still bugged about that? Here's some money. Get over it. And
And it was very Jackie Kennedy. She had blood on her shoes. And he says, oh, you're going to have to get rid of those. and then, why don't you come to this thing this afternoon? And she said, I just was at a thing like that, and somebody blew their head off. And I don't think I'm in the mood for that. Oh, okay. Well, if you change your mind, show up.
And that baffled him. It just well, why would you care? I mean.
Well, and let's face it. The background of that is this corporation killed her mother.
Right.
And she's suing them for that. And they hire her because she has useful skills for the corporation, right?
And and he's very clear about that. You know, at my level, those kind of considerations are irrelevant.
We don't care about grudges because it's all about profits. And it will profit us to have you on board. So here, have a job.
What it reminded me most of, even the lighting in that scene at the end, was Ned Beatty in Network. Closing the doors and explaining to what's his name? I can't think of the character's name. Shame on me. In Network, how the world really works. And there's no ideology. There's no Soviet Union. There's no America. There's only IBM and AT&T and Exxon. And corporations run everything, and get over it.
Is it Peter Finch? Is that who he's talking to? Then loses his mind.
And he asks the question, you know, have I seen the face of God? And Ned Beatty says, you might be right. And there is a little bit of that kind of stunned theology in this show. Where there's something going on that's so non-human. And so indestructible and so powerful and so removed from human concerns. It reminds me a little bit of William Gibson, who said if you were a space alien and you came to Earth and you were asked to identify the highest forms of life on Earth. I think he said something like Japanese kairetsus, the Catholic Church, and the mafia. Because they're all indestructible.
No matter what happens, they will be here 300 years from now.
And they're institutions that have transcended the human beings who created them. And they now have their own momentum, and nothing stops them. And you can kill as many people at the top as you like, and it will still go on. And there is a certain horror in looking at this evolved thing, this creature we created, human. And this is what one of the villains says, why he's not concerned about things. Because people created this. People.
That's my belief about the future of the show. Everyone's speculating. But I think that the woman with the blood on her shoes has been hired because they know she knows a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they know a lot about who did this hack, and they know that she's connected to that person. And that's why she's not on board for any business skills she has. She's on board because...
on purpose.
She's on purpose board. Because uh-huh. Elliot helped her at a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And they know Elliot is dangerous.
And there's...
So
she... And this is where the good writing comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a reason... Because she asks the question we are asking, which is, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you trusting me?
She
why
doesn't have a lot of...
elite
extraordinary
room.
Job skills. Yeah.
And he's... And so he... She asks the question that the audience asked, which is mm-hmm. very smart. But it's also, she serves a really important narrative purpose, which is to put you in the room
mm-hmm.
where these schemers let their hair down.
These monsters, yeah. And she's the human being with the eyes that you have. Yeah.
And so it's smart and it's well-constructed, and I mm-hmm. totally look forward to next year.
And she's being manipulated. I mean, clearly... She's there because they need connection. This is my opinion of things mm-hmm. is they because Elliot did help her in the meeting with
yes, he
the
did.
Former head of Evil Corp, the tech guy from Evil Corp.
Uh-huh.
And they know that Elliot they figured out that Elliot's the guy, I think. And
he can be very useful to them.
Yeah. Oh. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what happened. We talked about that. Some of the speculation was Elliot going to go work for the CIA? They'd catch him, and then they'd say, oh, we don't care that you're crazy. We don't care that you have schizophrenia.
No.
Yeah, we're going to put you to work at our Langley headquarters as a hacker. You can hack the Russians for us or whatever.
There were two more important – well, there were a lot of important scenes. Again, trying really hard not to spoil anything.
No, we're spoiling everything.
But there are a couple of scenes where Elliot – simply wills reality out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
I will not see what's in front of me. And reality changes.
Yeah.
Now, you're seeing it from his hallucinating point of view, and you get some objective angles as to what's going on in some of the things he's doing. But clearly, he has made some sort of bargain with his schizophrenic brain
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
certain information will be kept compartmentalized from Elliot.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Elliot has to dial in his other personalities to survive.
Yeah,
and they are starting to make demands on him, and that's really interesting because he's at the center of.
All right, let's stop and do a political show.
Okay, let's do that. All right, love
it. Hey, Driftglass, I've loved these 300 episodes with you.
I've loved them too.
Yeah.
Okay, babe.
Thank you very much for everything. I love you. And thanks, everybody, for listening and all your kind words.
Yeah. Laters, folks.
And support. Thank you.
See you in 301.
Bye.
Bye.